Even if there is, the Americans will want it all. They're so greedy.
Laughing, Toshi replied, We would too if we got there first.
I don't believe.
The image on Miyoko's screen suddenly caught her eye. Glancing down at the monitor displays, she saw that she was looking at a real-time image of the solar X-ray telescope.
Look at that, she said.
Toshi glanced at the screen. At what? It looks like a bunch of noodles all twisted together.
That's a sunspot field, Miyoko said. It's gaining energy very rapidly. I'll bet there's going to be a solar flare erupting within a day or so.
So what? Toshi said carelessly. We're safe down here.
Yes, of course. But no one should be out on the surface if the flare's plasma cloud reaches the moon.
Toshi's face grew serious. The Americans.
Someone should warn them.
They have their own observers, don't they?
Yes, I think so. Still.
You'd better let the chiefs know. Let them decide what to do. Savannah.
The expedition took off at 15:22 Eastern Time.
Ginny Anson's image on Joanna's wall screen looked tired and tense. She's lost enough weight over the past few months for it to show in her face, Joanna thought. Is she ill?
The two crewed ships landed safely in the Mount Wasser area, Anson went on. But one of the freighters crashed on landing. What?
Joanna nearly came out of her chair. Anson had not waited for her reply. She continued without a break.
About half of the cargo was damaged or destroyed in the crash, mostly scientific instruments and life support supplies.
We will have to either cut the mission short or resupply much sooner than anticipated in the mission plan. Almost as an afterthought, she added, There were no injuries to the expedition personnel. Joanna relaxed a little.
I want to be included in the decision on cutting the expedition short or resupplying.
She could see that Anson was waiting for her response. When it came, the base director nodded as if she had expected it.
Of course. We'll need to talk it over with all the top division management as well. How did the crash happen? Joanna asked.
They discussed the situation haltingly, impeded by the 3-second round-trip lag between Earth and Moon. Joanna had always found the communications lag annoying. This day it was maddening. Doug was out there in the open more than 1,000 miles from shelter, and the expedition was already in trouble the instant it touched down.
Ginny, she said finally, I have a favor to ask of you.
Anson's normally pert face, now drawn and weary, showed a sudden flicker of curiosity once Joanna's words reached her.
A favor? I'd like you to stay on a few weeks longer up there, until the expedition returns. I don't think it's a good idea to change base directors while that team's down at the South Pole.
Anson's expression went from curiosity to alarm.
I'm afraid I can't do that, Mrs. Stavanger.
Surprised, irritated, Joanna snapped.
Why not?
For 3 infernally long seconds, she waited for the answer.
I'm getting married. All the arrangements are made. Is that all?
Joanna eased back in her chair.
The arrangements can be changed. I'll personally pay for whatever it costs you. I want you at Moon Base until the expedition safely returns.
I can't have Greg up there while Doug's out in the wilderness, she told herself. It's a chance I won't take. But Anson replied firmly,
Mrs. Stavanger, it's not my fault that the expedition departed nearly 3 weeks late. I'm going to get married in San Antonio 2 weeks from tomorrow. I am leaving Moon Base on the 1st of the month, 8 days from now, as planned. I'm afraid I can't change those plans.
Her temper flaring, Joanna replied,
As long as you're an employee of Masterson Aerospace, you will follow the directives of your superiors. I want you at Moon Base until that expedition comes back.
The two women stared at each other from a 250,000-mile distance until Anson's image on the wall screen stiffened noticeably. She took a visible breath before replying. Then, with deliberate calm, she answered,
Mrs. Stavanger, if I have to resign from Masterson Aerospace, I will. I'm getting married on the 7th of next month in San Antonio, in the Alamo, and nothing is going to stop my wedding.
Joanna's immediate instinct was to tell the ungrateful little snot that if she thought she was going to travel back to Earth for her stupid wedding on a Masterson spacecraft, she had another think coming. But Joanna stifled that response. You catch more flies with honey than with vinegar, she told herself.
I would appreciate it very much, she said to the image on the wall screen, if you would reconsider your position.
I will be happy to get you the Alamo for a future date, or the Grand Canyon, or the Taj Mahal if you prefer. And I will, of course, want to give you and your husband a substantial wedding gift, since you are such a loyal and valued employee of this corporation. Please think it over. Before Anson's stubborn-faced image could reply, Joanna clicked off the connection. I'll give her a wedding gift, she said to herself grimly. And then I'll send her to our African division and let her play with the tsetse flies for the rest of her career. She didn't have to call up the list of waiting messages to know that Greg was impatient to talk with her. He had flown in from Kiribati to keep up the pressure on his mother to name him the new director of Moonbase. Greg has his own sources inside the board of directors, Joanna realized. He knows I've been planting the seeds for him, and he's impatient to see them grow. Over the years, the Space Operations Division had become the tail that wagged the corporate dog. Sales of new clipper ship models were the mainstay of the corporation's profits. When clipper ship sales were strong, the stockbrokers received dividends. When clipper ship sales sagged, workers were laid off. But the orbital manufacturing end of the space division had never broken clearly into the black. Even with raw materials supplied by Moonbase, the metal alloys and pharmaceuticals produced in the space stations were still too expensive to compete in the marketplace, except for the window walls, and even their profits were declining as the market for them became saturated. Joanna and the board of directors had looked into several reorganization plans that would separate the clipper ship production from the orbital manufacturing work. A dozen bright young executives wanted to be named head of the clipper ship program. Nobody wanted to be stuck with orbital manufacturing. Well, Joanna told herself, if Greg can actually find the strength to shut down Moonbase, all our orbital manufacturing will go down the drain with it, except for the window walls, and their costs will jump. Paul's dream will be dead. But maybe it will be for the best. I've given it nearly 20 years. How long can I keep on hoping for a miracle? And there was even more trouble with the nanotechnology division, which was also tottering on the brink of collapse. Nanomachines were used on the moon to produce water and build solar cells, but their uses on Earth had been slowed to a crawl by government regulations and a massive public relations campaign of demonstrations and protests, based on ignorance and hysterical fear in Joanna's view. Medical applications of nanomachines had been brought to a standstill by so-called safety regulations, although those who were rich enough went to nations such as Switzerland. The Swiss government's regulations did not apply to foreigners, especially very rich foreigners who quietly bought their nanotherapies there. Joanna herself had been toying with the idea of accepting nanomachines to keep her arteries clear of plaque. And there was always the temptation to use the bugs to tighten up sagging muscles, renew wrinkled skin, even break up fatty deposits and harmlessly flush them out of the body. Chris Cardenas had gotten herself into legal hot water by using nanobugs on herself to restore her failing eyesight. No glasses, no contact lenses, no surgery. The bugs restored her natural lenses to their youthful flexibility and strengthened the muscles that controlled them. 20/20 vision from only a few injections over a 3-week period, followed by 3 years of hounding by government lawyers and endless hearings in courts and the Canadian Parliament. And Cardenas had all the prestige and authority of a Nobel Prize backing her. Joanna shook all that out of her thoughts as she phoned the chief of the Space Operations Division and asked him to come to her office.
Why not use the virtual reality system? Ibrahim Rashid asked playfully.
Joanna was not amused. Omar, you're no more than 50 yards down the hall from me. Get your butt over here, in person.
Now? He teased.
At your earliest convenience, Joanna answered, with as much sarcasm as she could muster.
Hearkening and obedience, said Rashid.
Ibrahim Muhammad al-Rashid had been born in Baltimore, third son of second-generation Palestinian Americans. For all of his 42 years, he had balanced a firm belief in Islam with a firm belief that science and technology were gifts of Allah to help men in the struggle for existence. From his earliest childhood, it was apparent that he was extremely intelligent